What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Big election results in Kentucky, Mississippi, and Virginia. We will take a look later this hour at what yesterday's gubernatorial and legislative races say about what might happen in 2020. But first, it is only Wednesday, and it's already been another significant week in the impeachment inquiry. And joining us now with the latest is Nancy Cordes, chief congressional correspondent for CBS News. Nancy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So first of all, today we see that the number three person in the State Department has shown up to testify. Tell us more about that.
Right. He's one of the only witnesses who is actually appearing this week. Most of the others have been no-shows. He's the Undersecretary of State, as you said, the number three in the State Department. So he would have been privy to some very sensitive conversations with the Secretary of State about this controversy. And according to the Associated Press, he is telling congressional investigators behind closed doors that the Secretary of State and other senior officials, when they were urged to defend the U.S. ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, who was suddenly yanked out of Ukraine because Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal attorney, viewed her as an impediment to getting Ukraine to conduct these investigations into the Biden family, that when she was suddenly recalled and it was having an impact on morale at the State Department, they talked about whether to issue some sort of statement of support for her, but ultimately decided that it would hurt the effort to free up U.S. military aid to Ukraine. In other words, because it was the president who had withheld this military aid in what several witnesses have said was a quid pro quo to push Ukraine to announce these investigations that would help the president politically, that they thought that announcing support for her would damage their efforts to try to change the president's mind and get this aid flowing again, even without those promises from the Ukrainians to investigate. And so the Democrats will have a lot of questions for Hale about who exactly was in those conversations, what was said. Did the Secretary of State himself understand that there was a quid pro quo? And all of this, of course, coming after we learned that Gordon Sondland, the right. U.S. ambassador to the EU, has changed his testimony.
So I was just going to ask you about that. So David Hale showing up today, again, the number three person in the State Department. And as you pointed out, Nancy, the first this week, because the White House, the Trump administration had basically said it was going to follow a zero cooperation strategy. Mm-hmm. Seeing Hale show up to testify was kind of eye-opening. Do you right. think it's because of Gordon Sondland, Ambassador Sondland's revised testimony? Is that what we ought to call it?
I don't know if the two are connected. I do know that Hale is someone who has served his career at the State Department, so he's not necessarily someone who is as closely linked to President Trump himself as, say, Rick Perry, the Secretary of Energy, who said that he's not going to be showing up tomorrow, or Mick Mulvaney, the President's Chief of Staff, who we're told is probably not going to show up on Friday. And so he signaled a couple of days ago that he would be testifying. But yes, that Sondland addendum to his previous testimony was pretty eye-opening. He essentially submitted this three-page document to Congress on Monday saying that he does now recall, his memory has been jogged, mm-hmm. and he does now recall that he himself delivered a message to a top Ukrainian official saying, your aid is not going to be reinstated until you announce these anti-corruption investigations, which was kind of code for announce an investigation into Burisma, the energy company in Ukraine that had Hunter Biden, the Vice President Biden's son, as a sitting on its board. And so the fact that Sondland did that was kind of a sign that even some of these loyalists to the president, and remember that Gordon Sondland was not a career diplomat. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who was a very successful hotel magnate. He donated $1 million to the president's inaugural committee, and that's part of the reason he was named U.S. ambassador to the European Union. So he was someone who was who owed this particular role to the president, trying to get the president's message across in Ukraine. And even he is now saying, after multiple witnesses disputed his original testimony, that he does now recall this quid pro quo.
Right. So just to underscore the importance of this, right, in this 4-page sworn statement that he submitted, it directly contradicts the earlier testimony, right, that he gave to investigators, House investigators last month, where at that time he said he never thought there was any precondition on that Ukrainian aid.
Originally, he sort of proclaimed ignorance. He said, I didn't even realize what the connection was between Biden and Burisma until very late in the process. He sort of portrayed himself as someone who was kind of out of the loop and didn't really understand exactly what was going on. But then you had witness after witness after witness coming in and testifying, actually, that Sondland was the one delivering the president's message in some of these meetings. And he was even told point blank that he needed to stop by other top administration officials. And so it was clear that he needed to do something. And what was so interesting is that a lot of Democrats really held their fire. You had one or two who said, it looks like he's committed perjury. But by and large, most Democrats congratulated him after he changed his testimony. And that was strategic because they don't want to do anything that is going to discourage other individuals from testifying. They don't want people to be afraid that if you come in and testify and you say something that is wrong or untrue, that you might be charged with perjury. They want people to come in and sit down. And so they sort of handled him with kid gloves. And now they're all patting him on the back for coming in and changing his testimony.
But to be clear, though, Nancy, aren't Republican members of Congress looking perhaps to Kurt Volker's testimony, though, and saying that Volker didn't say that there's any explicit quid pro quo here. Is that right?
That's what they are trying to do. But keep in mind that until yesterday, they were all pointing to Sondland's testimony. And they kept telling us, look at Sondland, look what he said. He said no quid pro quo. Well, now that Sondland is saying there was a quid pro quo, now they're saying, oh, Sondland wasn't really involved. He was more peripheral. You have to look at Kurt Volker. And I asked Jim Jordan, who's been one of the president's fiercest defenders, just today, well, wait a minute. Kurt Volker didn't explicitly say there was a quid pro quo, but he certainly acknowledged this back and forth that they were having with Ukrainian officials trying to get them to announce these investigations into Biden and Burisma. And furthermore, you have half a dozen other diplomats who did explicitly say that there was a quid pro quo. Why do you believe him and not all these other diplomats? And he said, well, you know, Volker is very respected and he's been doing this a long time. And I said, well, everyone, all these other diplomats have the same profile. They're also very experienced and highly respected. And he didn't really have an answer for that. But, you know, at the moment, what Republicans seem to be hanging their hat on is the fact that Volker, one out of the more than a dozen witnesses that we've seen so far, didn't explicitly believe there was a quid pro quo. And number two, the fact that in the president's conversation with the Ukrainian president, that he didn't explicitly say, here's my quid pro quo, you know, which is sort of a shaky defense. Most people, you know, if they're about to do something inappropriate, don't say, okay, well, here we go. Right. I'm going to bribe you now, and here's the bribe. Mm-hmm. That's at least the argument that Democrats are making. They say this is bigger than one phone call.
But regarding what Ambassador Sondland has just recently said or submitted to Congress, I mean, things are moving rather quickly here, but I'm just seeing now that Fiona Hill, the top White House Russia advisor, is taking exception to some of the things that Sondland is saying. What do we know about that?
Right. So Fiona Hill, you'll recall, was the president's top advisor on Russian affairs. She was you know, steeped in Russia policy. She left over the summer just before the president's phone call. And her, you know, she's been publicly pretty quiet, although she was very willing to go in and testify. But her lawyer tweeted this morning that Sondland had fabricated his communications with Dr. Hill, none of which were over coffee. So apparently Sondland, in his 400 pages of testimony, which were released yesterday, he said that they had a conversation over coffee. Hill is saying that was not the case. And her lawyer goes on to say that Dr. Hill told Sondland what she told lawmakers, that the lack of coordination on Ukraine was disastrous and the circumstances of the dismissal of Ambassador Yovanovitch shameful. So clearly, Hill taking issue with one of the assertions in Sondland's testimony that was released yesterday. Her testimony has not been publicly released yet, but this really follows a pattern of multiple witnesses saying that various things that Sondland claimed in his testimony were untrue.
Okay, so that's sort of the latest in terms of what we know regarding testimony going on in the House impeachment inquiry. Tell us a little bit, I mean, Senator Mitch McConnell has been talking about, you know, what might take place in the Senate if an impeachment trial ever reaches there. What has he been saying?
Well, you know, he has tried in recent weeks to really steer clear of the substance of these allegations. He has had numerous opportunities to bolster the president's case. He hasn't really taken those opportunities. He says that it looks like this is all going to be coming the Senate's way eventually, so he's not going to weigh in on every twist and turn. But he is happy to weigh in on the process. He argues that the process taking place in the House is still unfair. And he said, interestingly, this week that while it does appear that the president is likely to get impeached in the House and that this will all come down to a trial in the Senate, that he doesn't see anything in these accusations right now that he believes would lead to the removal of the president. And basically what he's saying is that he doesn't think that these accusations are serious enough to cause Republicans in the Senate to side with Democrats in favor of removing the president. It's not the same as him saying that he himself doesn't believe there's anything wrong with what the president did. He's just saying he doesn't think that Republicans are going to go along with Democrats and actually vote to remove the president from office.
Well, Nancy Cordes, chief congressional correspondent for CBS News, on behalf of our listeners in Hawaii, let me tell you, aloha.
Aloha. Mahalo to you for having me on.
Hats off to you from listeners from your home state. Nancy Cordes again, chief congressional correspondent for CBS News. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we will take a look at what all of this Washington politics and the impact it's having on state and local elections. This is On Point.